for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Now, here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us. It is Monday, June 3rd, 2024. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. We're so grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information, and boy, do we have a lot of timely information to talk about today. We bring it to you in an audio format so you can listen to anytime, anywhere. We are doing more and more video of this, and you'll be able to find our channel on YouTube. Mostly what we're doing is we're creating short reels that you see out there. That's what we're doing with the video part of the content of it. We just want you all to have this however you care to want to view this. I want to say a special thank you to Adam DeSanctis, Les Parker, Matt Graham, Mr. Kittle, who's here with us today, Alice Alvey, who's here with us today. Alan Pollock is on spring break. It's take his kids to the U.S. Virgin Islands is where he's going. And so have a great vacation. Alan, Bill Corbett's here, and so is Mark Helm. Good to have everyone joining us. We're going to get through the regular stuff fairly quickly because we have some really major news that's breaking that we want to talk about and some action that needs to be taken by you all so we can get our voices heard. And so let's get cranking. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Byte Software. If you have an uncompromising idea of how you want to go about doing this, in other words, it's an idea you don't want to have to go conform to the way your LOS does and force you to do it, you need to go to Byte. They give you a lot of flexibility in the way they design and manage their custom workflows in-house and the way they do the macro-based automation valuation rules, as well as countless automation items. Check out Byte Software on our homepage. Look it on lending, or go out to there. It's B-Y-T-E. Very powerful software. Wonderful. Finastra. Wow. This is the number one fintech company in the world. And I interviewed one of the new guys that's with them, one of the senior executives. Happens to be in the Atlanta area. But this, again, is an international company. Number one fintech company in the world. And he was talking about AI. Where are we going? What we can do? He gives us deep insights into cloud computing and all of the ramifications. We'll be releasing that podcast coming up. The current one that's up there right now you can listen to is Colin Gazinski, The Trends Among Lenders in Today's Current Market. Very good. We recorded that May 1st, but I really am excited releasing out the one that we just recorded. You're going to really get a lot of information out of it. Also, Lender Homepage, their Loansify chat style application captures a complete 1003 in a simple, personalized way, resulting in one of the industry's highest completion rates. And you start looking at the completion rate, that's something we need to be looking at. How is your technology working from a completion rate standpoint? They're the highest in the industry. The real-time milestone notifications, on-demand pre-approval letters, seamless doc collection, and more. Check it out. Also, Truve. If you're looking to save money, check out, go no further than look at Truve Bridge. Their platform offers a user-friendly SDK for integrating consumer data collection into workflows. It features a customized UX, optimizing for conversion, reduction of friction, and comprehensive developer documentation for easy integration. Best part, 80% cheaper than the competition out there. And they cover 90% of the workforce. Really good stuff. Also, special thank you to our other sponsors, Angel AI. You have got to check out AskAngel.ai. If you're not playing around with that, you need to. It's something that is starting to gain major attraction. Also, Candid. Love this CRM, what Garrett Locklear has built, as well as the Mortgage Bankers Association. Love what they're doing so much, trying to fight this. Some of the comments that Bob Brooks has recently made really shines the light on a topic we're going to be talking about later. The complexity and spider web of regulation is just, it's untenable. We can't continue with this as it is, and hamstringing our industry. And so appreciate all that the MBA is doing. Also, two co-ops we're part of, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative. Both of these have give you the lender ability and vendors to get together on a more intimate setting We love going to both of these conferences. David Kittle is with us, who's one of the founders and is the CEO of TMC, the Mortgage Collaborative. Get his report on what he's up to in just a minute. Also, Mobility, MMI, and Modix. I love these two business intelligence tools. We just interviewed Dale Larson III. Pretty cool. Generational company. Dad, father, and son doing this, and Dale Jr. is doing a fabulous job of what they're doing at Modix. We just recorded an interview with him this last week, talking to you about how you can use this business intelligence tool more effectively in reaching realtors. We're all trying to figure out how to connect with realtors in a more effective way. And we're going to be revealing that when we publish that podcast. Also, my good friend Ken Perry at Knowledge Coop and their learning management system. Last Wednesday, we released Adi Pavlovic. The topic was bridging the gap between mortgage and real estate. He has a company that you got to just go listen to what he's doing. He is, by going in and looking at this technology, you'll have an idea of how you can compete with the likes of Quicken. Everyone knows how innovative Quicken is. This is taking some of the things that they've done, like what they've done, and gives it that power to you. Upcoming this week, this is the interview that I did this last week with Michael Stochansky, Finastra, on the topic of micro technology trends that are and their adoption in the financial sector. Very interesting discussion. That is a must watch. Of course, all of our podcasts are must watch or listen to. Encourage you to do that. And this Friday, we'll be releasing the interview we did with J.A. Dava and Paul Waltrip, Latreia Coaching and Consulting. Great couple of friends, recent new friends. I just love these guys and what they're doing. In the podcast today, after we get through the regular segment, we're going to be talking about an article published and brought to our attention by our contributor, Bill Corbett, the National Mortgage News article. And we'll be talking about that in great depth. Also, in real estate news, what's going on with the NAR lawsuit and how the Northwest is breaking. Big breakout there of how that NMLS is breaking away from the settlement and going a different direction. And then the CFPB closing costs, all that great information. Also, we've got Alice Allenby going to give us an update. So let's get into it. But let's start first with MBA's Mortgage Minute with Adam DeSantis. What do you have, Adam?
Hi, I'm Adam DeSantis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. The CFPB last week released its anticipated request for information regarding fees imposed in residential mortgage transactions. The RFI seeks input from industry participants, consumers, and others on the impact closing costs have had on borrowers and the mortgage market, citing, among other things, the rising cost for credit reports, credit scores, title insurance, and employment verification. While the RFI contains no specific policy proposals, MBA in press statements and speeches made by MBA President and CEO Bob Brooksmith has been critical about the CFPB's consistent, illogical use of the term junk fee as it pertains to mortgage closing costs. As you know, most of the fees the CFPB cites are required by the safety and soundness standards of the GSEs, federal guarantors, and banking regulators. They also protect taxpayers and consumers and are fully disclosed to borrowers before they are committed to proceed with an application. MBA has been vocal about the sharply rising costs of credit reports and other credit reporting products and is pleased that the RFI mentions this, providing an opportunity to share concerns about the factors driving these pricing changes amidst challenging market conditions for lenders of all sizes and business models. We welcome the opportunity to respond to the RFI and will work with members to provide an in-depth overview on mortgage closing costs, including answering the 9 questions posed in the RFI. Comments are due on August 2nd of this year. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Adam DeSantis. Also, make sure you're out there supporting all that the MBA is doing for us or trying to do for us. Sometimes there's headwinds that they're facing, and it really needs our support. So download the Mortgage Action Alliance app. You can find that on your smartphone and then have your voice heard. It's so important that we support what they're doing. Again, the MBA is a small lobby compared to the National Association of Realtors, for example, and other many major other lobbies. We've got to come together and support what they're doing. There are some things that are challenging about what they support, but the vast majority of what they're doing for us is really good. I'm really impressed with some of the commentary specifically from Bob Brooksmith lately. Let's get over TM Spotlight and this week's macro view of the markets. Les, what you got.
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
It's getting to the point where
Jay is no fun anymore. He is sorry.
Recent Treasury auctions show investor hesitation to buy. Do they expect higher yields? The low appetite coupled with higher for longer Fed policy will cost the high debt U.S. federal government more interest. According to projections by the OECD, an intergovernmental organization with 38 member countries, U.S. gross debt will exceed 200% by 2040, and Italy will barely be worse.
Bears are yours, bulls are mine, Fed is what it is. Jay makes it hard.
These views are mine. Ease your pain at tmspotlight.com.
Okay, give Parker a break there. He's doing that without the music playing. So he nails it really close. I love it. Anyway, good job. Yeah. By the way, if you didn't listen to the Memorial Day podcast that we did, Bill, I want to get into that in just a minute. First of all, we're going to go into Matt Graham's segment. Then I want to talk about his prediction because I want to make sure those that may have missed last week's commentary by Les about interest rates being below 6%. Alice, did you hear that? Below 6%. Les actually said it. It will be there before year end with all that's going on with the Treasury auctions. Wow. That's a steep hill to climb from a belief standpoint. But anyway, got a lot to talk about on all of that. By the way, before we go there, sign up for Les Parker's TM Spotlight newsletter. You can get the paid version for free by putting the word power for Power Seller in the sign-up code. So get the paid version for free. Love free. Anyway, Matt Graham is here, founder and CEO of MBSLive.net with a market update. Can't wait to get his take on all the activity that took place last week, the rise up. And we got a roller coaster going back down. We're on the roller coaster. Let's find out what Matt has said about last week and what he has to say about what's coming up this week.
This is Matt Graham with the MBS Live market update. Last week was holiday shortened as Monday was closed for Memorial Day. Bond traders got into the office and immediately began selling bonds, making for a very volatile start to an otherwise fairly uninspired week in terms of scheduled data and events. There were several market movers out of the gate on Tuesday morning, including Treasury auctions and Fed speakers. Those combined to push 10-year yields up to roughly 4.55 after breaking up and out of the 4.34 to 4.5 range that had been intact for the previous 2 weeks. The following day, on Wednesday, the 7-year Treasury auction added some insult to injury, but the momentum was already in place from the overnight session, and there was a sense that the bond market was simply playing it extra safe or extra cautious or extra defensive through the Treasury auction process, and that's something that can sometimes connote a little bit of a bounce in a friendly direction after the auction cycle wraps up. Indeed, that proved to be the case. Whether it was the reason for it being the case or not is impossible to say, but in any event, Thursday saw stronger momentum with bonds erasing all of Wednesday's losses and then some. There were some market movers in play that morning, including the GDP data. It was not the GDP headline itself. This was just a revision to the previous month, and it came in right in line with the 1.3 that was initially reported. But corporate profits and final sales were revised lower, and quarterly PCE prices, that's the price index that initially hurt us last month, was revised another 0.1% lower, and that implies softer inflation than initially reported in the Q1 data. As is typically the case when GDP comes out, we will get the PCE price index in the monthly flavor the following day. That was the case on Friday morning, and it came in at 0.2 versus 0.3 forecast at the core level. 0.2 is a good number to be at because that's what that series will be reading when the core PCE in annual terms hits the Fed's 2% target. 0.17 would be the unrounded underlying number, and that rounds up to 0.2. So if you look back at the previous decade plus of 2% inflation, we had readings of 0.1s and 0.2s for the most part. That was well received by the bond market, but notably it was the highest possible reading that could still be rounded to a 0.2 level. So essentially it was just a slightly lower than expected on target reading, more than it was a true beat. But I'm splitting hairs. The bond market liked it. There was an additional rally on Friday. It was early and then stable. And it took us into the new week in decent territory, modest overnight gains. And now this morning, we have ISM manufacturing getting the week kicked off in much stronger fashion. ISM came out weaker than expected, and the prices paid component was also 3 points weaker than expected. Bonds reacted immediately with solid volume and a big drop in 10-year yields from 4.45 all the way down to 4.40 and change. MBS are up nearly 3/8 of a point. Rate sheets are coming out much stronger than they were last week, and there is, at least at the moment, some semblance of hope for the bond market looking back at April and May and seeing recent highs in the rearview mirror, making progress down from that. However, it's important to note that progress depends entirely on how the economic data comes in during the rest of this week. This was not the most important report of the week. That will be Friday's jobs report. But even in the interim, things like ISM services on Wednesday and job openings tomorrow probably pack a bit more of a punch than this morning's ISM data. That's going to do it for this week. Back to you.
Thank you so much, Matt. Appreciate it. Encourage you to sign up for mbslive.net. You can do so by going to mbslive.net and put in LOL for Lickin' on Lending and a sign-up code. And it'd be great to get your free extended credit period of time. So anyway, lots of great information on this website. Smiled when I saw the market drop today, Bill. That was encouraging. I want to get everyone's commentary real quickly on market conditions, especially, Bill, I'm going to make sure we point out last week's prediction by Les Parker. Alice wasn't here to be jumping up and down and doing the normal cheering. It was just you and I and Mark that did last week's podcast because of the holiday. But talk about that, and then we'll get everyone's thoughts and opinions.
So before we jump into that, I want to focus on a couple of phrases that Matt used, where the combination of liking it and splitting hairs. And that's when Matt was talking about the unrounded data.
The hard
part right now is so much of the market is based on sentiment and what they like. And while everybody says it's data driven, you could make an argument that the market should be biding its time now until the big report comes out on Friday. But it's not. It's still rallying. So that sentiment and data are sawing back and forth as to which is the most important. But the key thing out of that short term is sentiment can change way faster than anybody can react. The market will start to move and you'll try and rationalize it based on, well, the data didn't change that much, and you'll completely miss that it's the sentiment that's driving it.
Yes. Yeah. Isn't it more momentum when you look at that, a more of an emotional component? When you say sentiment, it has a more emotional component to it.
Absolutely. And that's to Matt's point. Like, folks, we're taking the data and looking at the unrounded information to justify their position and their sentiment. Now, jumping bigger picture to Les's comments last week, talking about sub 6%.
Alice, get your pencil out. Get your pencil out, Alice. You write this down.
Now, but I also want to be careful because Les said two things in there that are both equally important. Right? He's talking about by the end of the year, sub 6%. But then he's talking about some pretty bad draconian scenarios further down the road with driven by dollar weakness of significantly higher rates than even where we are today.
Right. There was a short-term good news, which we will focus on a little bit. I locked in on that, but there in last week's report. And you need to check. That's why you need to sign up for TM Spotlight, folks. That's stuff that Les is putting out. And again, Alice, as you have said, he's been scary accurate on some of this stuff. And I love the fact that we could see sub sixes. That's a wonderful report. And I want to get your immediate action, Alice, then we'll get up to you, Mr. Kittle.
Yeah, I think what's interesting in hearing the sound bites on it, literally, the aspect that it's coming from forces beyond what we would typically see influencing rates.
Yes.
Is what he zeroed in on, is what I think everybody should listen to, Bill's point.
Yep. Very good. Mr. Kittle.
Hi, Dave. What would you like me to comment?
We're talking about interest rates. You rascal. You could comment on anything, but let's stick with rates right now. And what we just heard.
Nothing would be better for the market and people short term than to have rates come down. But yeah. I think in some of this, from what Les has to say and everything that's out there right now, we have continuing growing debt. And the interest rates on that debt is a lot higher, which pushes the debt higher. The interest on the debt is, I think, higher than our budget on defense spending, if you want to put it in perspective. If you think about it, if rates come down around the sixes or whatever, it's just my opinion. It's what we all give here. This is very short term. Everything is building on the backside.
The other side of that, David, is we'll have a tendency to, everyone's going to go, euphoria, we're back, we're going strong. And then wham, when secondary market moves, if you're not covered enough, the train runs over you because you didn't have enough coverage. So what the knee-jerk reaction is, oh my God, we need to put on more coverage. So then they pile on the coverage and then the train runs back over you because the market corrects backs the other way. And we've watched that happen for all the decades you and I have been in this business. And so I think this is one of those similar things. I think what it comes down to, we have got to focus in on costs, which we talked a lot about last week. You've got to get to the point where you cannot ignore what's going on at the cost of manufacturer mortgage loan. It is not sustainable, especially when you see companies out there like Selligence owns Angel AI, which has reduced the cost of originating a mortgage loan, fully loaded operational costs, less than $1,000 per loan, actually less than $500 a loan. I'm challenging everybody on this call, listening to this, pay attention to your cost to originate, do something about it. You may wish you hadn't grown to the size that you did if you do not address this, because the size will be the thing, if your costs are too high, that will kill you faster than anything else. Mark Helm, final words on this very important topic. Market rates, thoughts?
Yes, sir. It's no secret to anybody on the phone that I'm working with a turnaround right now and trying my best to keep a company solvent. And we've had some interesting things happen with our investors in this last week. And investors nowadays don't want to pay attention to pipelines they committed to, which can put us in really bad shape. And I'm talking about the private investors. We're hedged on the Fannie and Freddie and Ginnie stuff, but on the private investors, it's a little bit tougher because we think we have a stream of a pipeline and all. But let me tell you about my conversations I've had with numerous people. I have been really close to a bunch of realtors across the country in rural America, different areas of the country, Georgia, Atlanta, Florida. And also, I've been really close to a bunch of builders in the same states, in the same footprint. And the builders are starving and the realtors are starving. I got the number one realtor in two different areas of the country, in their county and city and all that, that they're not even closing but a loan every 2 months. They can't live on that. I got builders that have had to lay off their teams of people. And we've had this discussion before, is how much of this economy in this country is driven on building. It's not just the financial aspect. It's the manufacturer's aspect. It's the air conditioners. It's the appliances. It's the people putting roofs on the houses. It's the labor market. It's the insurance industry. It touches everything. There's two industries in this country run this country. And one of these days, everybody will figure out it's the automobile and the housing industry. And that's what really this country is all about. And when they start faltering, it's a problem. I'd like to believe the 6% is coming to at least give us a slight reprieve. We know it can't last a long time. So I just challenge everybody, just like you both Davids have said, pay attention to your business, cut your costs, be lean and mean, and be prepared for the worst, even when you have the best.
When you're coming in, it's like the eye of a hurricane. There's that beautiful, wonderful piece, blue skies, birds sailing around in the middle of the eye, and then the other side of the wall hits you, and it is oftentimes more devastating and destructive. Great comments, Mark. Thank you so much. We could spend a lot of time talking about it, but I want to reserve more time to talk about what's going on with CFPB, the National Association of Realtors. Alice has some other things as well. So let's get over to you, Alice Alvey. Good to have you with us. Just appreciate you so much. And really interested in what was posted on the Dodd-Frank update.com website. Let's get into it. Alice?
Hi, Dave. First of all, a quick sound check. Is my sound okay this way?
You do. It's not quite as good as that big, massive blue Yeti that you bought. That sounds good, but I know you're more mobile, so this is good. We'll take you how good. This sounds good.
All right, I'll go this way. This might be better. Okay, yes, and pardon everyone for my hoarse voice. I'm just getting over a bad cold here. So the CFPB did publish a request for information, and there's a really interesting take on this one. As you mentioned, you can read the Dodd-Frank update. They got a couple of thoughts from different folks there, but essentially they're asking for answers to several questions that are about particular fees causing hardship for consumers. And they're really looking for a lot of data from us as lenders. How are fees currently set? Who profits from the fees? Who benefits from the fees? And so one of the things that you have to keep in mind on these requests for information is they are responsible for making a case as to why they are doing this. And we just really don't see that in here. What is their goal? We know that there have been some conversations in the past about, we've all felt it in the industry, the increase in the credit report fees, and then they've also commented about title fees. But this is an RFI on all fees, not even though they call out those two as examples. So as a lender, when you're thinking about, or you're a broker, if you're in this industry and you're thinking about commenting, there really is a choice a company has to make on, all right, how much do I really want to tell them? And what direction do I want my response to be in? Because this is a very broad request. What is driving the recent price increases of credit report and credit scores is specific to that fee. But really, they're also asking about all closing costs and what have been the increases over the last several years and looking for data. So I'm curious to get thoughts from this group. I'm always a little cautious when an RFI feels open-ended, and I don't know what the objective is for this. So most RFIs, you have a sense of what the agency is trying to accomplish with that. You can make sure that your data and your comments frame to a particular goal that's important to the industry. And so I think as an industry, we have a lot of thinking to do to get together through things like the Mortgage Collaborative and MBA. This is one where I would say we should respond jointly so that we are sending a clear message on what we want the objectives to be. It's not one where random lenders firing out different thoughts or a loan officer chiming in is going to have any impact. So this is a very different type of ROI and one that lenders need to prepare for and I think collaborate on. I'll stop there, at least on this one, to get the group's thoughts.
Yeah, no, that's really good. Dave Kittle, you as the CEO of TMC, Mortgage Collaborative, taking a group of people to DC to talk to Chopra. Talk a little bit about that. I think, first off, kudos to you, David. I love the fact that you're doing that, having your voices heard. But to Alice's point, they're publishing that they are wanting to go out and get this RFP. What's your thoughts
RFI.
On it? RFI, excuse me, RFI. I said RFP, meant RFI. Thanks for correcting that.
Yeah, so we do a once a year trip. We have an advocacy group inside the Mortgage Collaborative. We're taking, I think it's about 14 to 16 of us will be in DC. We're going to meet with the GSEs and FHFA, Ginnie Mae, HUD, and tomorrow afternoon we'll be at the CFPB. Timely as it is, the real question
Very
to me,
timely.
They're worried about closing costs. Right. And because they want to protect the consumer, yet the onerous regulations that are put on the lenders drive up the cost to originate the loan. And most of that gets passed through at some point or another. An interesting question. And to Alice's point, this is an open-ended RFI and you put it out there. And is it going to come back and slap you in the face for the information put out there? That's what you have to do.
I'm sorry,
go ahead.
Gabe. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I completely agree with you that as a lender, what my response would want to be is it's the regulations that have driven up the costs.
Hello.
And they want to go line by line down a loan estimate and a closing statement, go, okay, this is that fee. And it's almost like a deflection into, right? You're trying to go after vendors, which is a different animal altogether, as many layers as others have pointed out. And the real cost is in the regulations.
Every time it is. And of course, we can talk about the two big things. We've mentioned it on here before. Biggest cost, it's not on the settlement statement, but it's cost what we're paying the loan officer comp is the elephant two in the room, and title insurance. that's where you can go after. I know the credit reports have gone up, but it's an insignificant cost overall compared to the, again, I'll use the term, onerous regulations on the back end that every lender, bank, credit union faces every single day. That's where the cost is.
Yeah. By the way, CFPB listens to this podcast. We're so grateful to have you in the side of the CFPB listening to us. We understand the charter that you have and applaud you for looking at helping keeping our industry safe and sound. But it's the bigger issue is, are you doing it in a way that is supporting and helping a healthier industry? Bill, you had some thoughts.
And to piggyback off of that, I think the responses from our industry have to be written both to the CFPB, but it also, there is going to be a large group of folks that will pile on and every fee, it's bad, it should go away. Part of the industry response has to be to that side of the equation and explain outside of the regulatory why the services and the underlying fees, obviously some of them credit reports gotten out of hand, but a lot of the other things, it's the services ultimately benefit the consumer. And you have to be careful about pushing back so hard. And one of the things that they've talked about is discount points. And there's several articles out there. Oh, discount points are bad. Well, do folks understand that if it weren't for discount points, there's a sizable chunk of folks that wouldn't be able to get a loan, right? Yeah. So are they really that bad?
And it's calculated to a predetermined formula.
Yeah.
It's not like we're going out there and just picking our own buy down fees. Yeah.
Discount points adjust right. The yield up or down or whatever it is. That's all it is.
Yeah. To our CFPB listeners, I think this is the part that's most disconcerting to those of us in the industry. It shows just such that part of this whole thing shows such a lack of understanding of the way our industry functions on that.
One of the comments too, if I could throw this out quickly, David, is a loan officer can't negotiate their price to make the deal. And all that does, and they do that, if they want to lower their commission, they can't do that to make the deal, which who's benefiting from them doing that? The consumer.
So from CFPB standpoint, with the credit report fees, they have gotten outrageous. There's no contention that that fee has increased exponentially and should get looked at.
And inexplicably.
Why. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a couple of them. But I hope their expectation is not that lenders are going, okay, this fee needs to be looked at and could be changed. I think hitting on the big points, like you guys have said, what's the overhead that we're trying to cover because of the increasing expenses of constant audit being under constant scrupulous and the technology requirements to stay in compliance? It's just a lot of overhead. And you guys have talked about how much we have to try and get overhead down. We want to do the right thing by consumers. No one in the lending industry wants the consumer to have a problem misunderstanding fees. If we start bundling fees, then it's less transparency for the consumer. I think there's a lot of comments to be ferreted out here to make sure we are looking right. We want to make sure the consumer has full information. They're being charged fairly, but our hands are tied as a lender. If my credit provider ups the fee, if the title company ups the fee, I got to pass that on to the customer. I can't eat those charges. And so I think that's part of what they're trying to find out here.
Hopefully it's a legitimate education. Let's go out and get information. But I think it comes back to my point a little bit earlier. It gets disconcerting to me that they don't understand this, which means who are we hiring at CFPB? So, David, when you're sitting there in front of Chopra tomorrow, try to get some insights. I'd love to get you next week on the podcast commenting about that.
Certainly I will, but this is not for me to opine tomorrow, really. It's our lenders who are actually doing it.
Yes.
But, you know, and
3x5 cards, David. Give them the question in advance. Lead them.
What's affecting them every day? It's a really good dialogue face-to-face with those that are affected by the decisions that are made.
Yep. Mark.
Hey, there's nobody on this call, some close, but nobody on the call has been around as long as you and I have. And I have three pet peeves that I want to mention, and you've touched on every one of them. I have a pet peeve that title costs or title policy costs are going up when basically we insure their incompetency in putting together the title policy. Okay. Think about what we do. It's going
sorry,
up.
Sorry, title insurance companies listening to this, but it's true.
Yeah, it's true. And then on the flip side, on credit reports, that's one of the most automated functionalities in the country. Still, we have errors in it, and it's still going up. And one that y'all might not have focused on, I want to let you know on. It's an actual subjective thing that a borrower might want to do. But if a borrower goes out today and orders an inspection through their realtor on their property, tell them what might be wrong with it, do you know those things have gotten up to $800 to $1,000 in some areas of the country? $800 to $1,000 to have a detailed property inspection on the house you're buying. That is about ridiculous too. And somebody's got to pay for that. The buyer does. And he doesn't feel comfortable because the realtor sells him and says, you really need this to know what you're buying. And all those things contribute to this process we're getting into where less and less people are going to qualify and expenses get higher and higher. I don't know. Those are my big pet peeves.
Good pet peeves is a good soapbox to get up on and mount on. Alice, you were commenting in there. So any thoughts?
Oh, I agree. I think those are three great ones. So thank you, Mark, for pointing that out, right? Their fees go up, but we don't see necessarily an improvement in the error rates. And there's a lot of technology there. I think for the rest of the group, I think I'd be really interested to hear if you're think it's smart that we do respond collectively, or if you have feedback for companies who do want to respond individually.
I get nervous about the individual feedback at this point, and I'm thinking this is where Mortgage Action Alliance app, where we could have our voice heard. But I really would like to get everyone's thought on it. I'm glad that what you're killing. So I think the other way to do it is go to your co-op. In this case, David's leading in a group. And so that's an organization. There's CHLA. Taylor Stark, good friend, who's really involved, just met with Chopra about some of this stuff last week. There's other groups, Lenders One, that is out there, and we need to come together, but we all need to be in somewhat coordination with the MBA. Would you agree with that, David?
Of course, I think everything needs to be coordinated with that, the realtors, the home builders, and all of it, but each one of us at different sizes of the organization only have the ability to take a small number in. Our advocacy group, we're not a PAC. We don't have lobbyists, and we don't go up to the Hill to meet congressmen and senators. We go meet our regulators, and that's more important to our lenders, the size of lenders that we have. TMC right now, I think whatever the volume ends up being, we're somewhere between 12 and 15% of the marketplace, which is nothing to sneeze at collectively inside.
Yes, that's significant, yeah.
Alice, Union Home, they're a member of the Mortgage Collaborative. And Alice, I will tell you that got something. It's 3 o'clock tomorrow. So between now and then, shoot me an email with your concerns, anything you and Bill and your group want to articulate, and I'm happy to take it.
Good. All right. Bill's one of the founding members of TMC, and love Bill as a leader in the marketplace. Any other commentary on this? I think we've covered this. Pay attention to it. Get with the MBA. Get with your co-op. Whichever one that you're a member of, have these words in to David. Even if you're not a member of the co-op, David, can I say this, that could we give your email out so that people that are not a part of the co-op can send you feedback in advance of your meetings?
It depends on how much that is.
It could be a lot of feedback, but at least let's open the door for that to happen. I'm thinking is you're going to be next through there. So anyway, also gives you an opportunity to try to get them involved.
The cost of it is they're going to get a, do you want to join? Respond email.
Exactly right. Why are you not here? Why are you not being part of us? So anyway, very good. We're going to publish this email in the show notes here on this, and you're welcome to get a hold of the listeners. One other thing I want to talk about is the Northwest MLS not joining NAR settlement. They are breaking free of this. By the way, they're one of the first MLS. I said NMLS, Northwest Multiple Listing Service. They are not joining the NAR settlement. Now, that is really interesting. They were the first to react to the lawsuits. They came out and did some of the most proactive, I think, common sense things. So having started my career 50 years ago up in the Pacific Northwest, kudos out to them. It was my first response.
I haven't had a chance to completely digest into it, but I will say when you think about why I wouldn't want to be in the main settlement is I feel that I don't owe that much money. I don't want to share in the payments. Is my understanding on how joining the settlement would work. To your point, Dave, if they've done things that have met what the suit is alleging, then maybe they feel they can get out of this for less money.
Yeah. And they also have done some very proactive things. When the first lawsuit first showed up, they did some things proactively that everyone else was shell-shocked by and did not take action. So they've been very proactive in that. Pretty impressive. I bring that to all your attention, listeners, to your attention of this. We're going to put a link to this article in Real Estate News. We'll put a link to it in there. But I think this should be brought to each of your MLS, your multiple listing in your local community there, and say, hey, you do not necessarily have to join in on this NAR settlement. You do not have to. So if you haven't been proactive, maybe you should. But if you have been proactive, as the Northwest has been, MLS has been, then maybe not. Bill, any thoughts?
I don't understand enough of what they've done proactively from the beginning to really understand their benefits. But to your point, clearly, they feel like they're better off standing on their own.
Yeah, they feel very secure about it. And it's solid grounds for that as well. One of the last things I want to cover for today, it's a sensitive topic. It is the strength and the financial condition of our banking system. Every independent mortgage lender that's listening to this is subject to a warehouse line of credit. If we don't have warehouse lines, we're dead. I was recently quoted in an American Banker magazine, and then a couple of my comments got pulled out and republished by a number of people that I don't believe we're in a systemic problem as far as warehouse lendings is at this minute. But there's an article, again, a link of which will be put in the show notes. And this one captured my attention big time because it says there are $517 billion in unrealized losses that could hit the banking system. And it says 63 lenders on the brink of insolvency. Now, Bill, let's get your comments on it, because I think for those that do not understand the mark-to-market of what's going on, I'd like to have you explain it for everyone.
Yeah, so banks that bought mortgages, treasury securities, and when rates were ultra-low have those.
By the way, can we alter that? It also almost like they had a choice to buy. They didn't have a choice. If I understand back then, the feds came in and says, you will buy these treasuries at this rate.
Correct. So banks that were buying treasuries at treasury's behest and buying mortgage-backed securities at the ultra-low rates, put them in their held for investment portfolio so they don't have to be marked to market.
Right.
Now the challenge is, as their liquidity needs have grown, there are more and more institutions that may have to sell some or all of their holdings for liquidity purposes. So now there's much more of a focus on what is the unrealized loss in their portfolio. And that number is staggering. And it is, where it can come into play.
$517 billion.
If you're a bank and you've got commercial real estate exposure, for example, as you're unwinding a deal, you need liquidity, you may be forced to sell some of those securities. So again, that's the focus on how far underwater they are. The other connection to the mortgage banking world is, if a bank, they're in warehouse lending and they love the warehouse business, and another event occurs where they need liquidity, they have two choices. They can unwind their warehouse business, which is one of the fastest ways to improve liquidity, or they can sell those securities, which are massively underwater.
It's like a slow death or sudden death. It's like one. And for those that are new to the industry, that are listening to this podcast, I want to make sure when we say mark to market that we explain what that is. When you mark an asset to the market, you have an asset, you have your home, let's say it's worth this. But if there's a precipitous drop in that home, you don't realize that drop in the home until you what? Go to sell that home. So a mark-to-market analysis is almost like an entry that is on the books, that, and they're saying it's unrealized. They are not requiring them to report the mark of that asset, that treasury that they were asked in air quotes, forced to buy. And now they have it on their balance sheet, and they go, oops, Yeah, sorry we made you do that. And I know these are deeply underwater. So I guess what? We're not going to require you to report the value of that today because it's a massive loss. But that's what this is all about. And your point is well taken. So a mark-to-market is marking a current value of a current asset you own, like a home, and to if you had to sell it. And you don't have to realize that until you go to sell it. But if you do have to sell it, that's when the proverbial crap hits the fan.
What we're missing here is, and everything there is correct, what we said a little few minutes ago, is that they're forced to buy, the value goes down, and on the back end, they raise the liquidity requirements, which means now they have to sell or they close the warehouse lines down, one of the two things that were mentioned. So forced to buy, now forced to sell after the market goes down, total control, another onerous overreach by the government.
Yes. And it's almost the part that, again, blows my mind is this word, Bill, you said, it says, I steer away from conspiracy theories, but it's almost like at some point in time, you scratch your head, go, is this by design? Is there someone out there trying to destroy the system, our financial system? And I don't want to get in down that rabbit hole, but the bottom line is you can start drawing some really interesting conclusions as to the mess we find ourselves in with just this issue. And you say, why do we care? It's the consequence back to us IMBs, those of us that are independent mortgage bankers, IMBs out there, and the fact that you could, not saying will, but could face a warehouse shortage and a serious warehouse liquidity issue.
David, the key word in this is it's unrealized. So it's not realized yet. If you hold on to it, it's like my stock's gone down. You only take a loss on a stock if you sell it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Warehouse, anything else, but they're being forced to sell it because they're raising the liquidity.
That's the point. Yeah. They were forced to buy it. And now we have an underwater thing. And now because of liquidity issues and they're raising the capital requirements, which goes into the Basel III, what's going on with Basel III,
right,
is what's creating this whole conundrum is it's the unintended consequences. I'm going like, is anyone connecting the dots here? If they are, then that's much more nefarious in the implications. Sobering. This one is sobering, listeners. Is that okay? So what do we do? Do we sit and wring our hands about this and said, no, you know what? Here's the things you can do. You need to get to know your warehouse lender. You need to talk to them. How is their solvency? Get to know the bank. We sometimes go to our warehouse lenders and we're just, please give me a warehouse line. Please, can I keep my line? I love you guys. Everything's good. But we don't do the due diligence on the institutions that are backing them. And I think it's so important that we do that. That's if there's any takeaway from this, pay attention. Is the lender from whom you have a warehouse line one of the 63 lenders in this article that says on the brink of insolvency? Bill?
And Dave, just in general, if you're a senior leader in an organization, you ought to have a list of 10 things every day that you're starting off thinking, what if this happened, and have your plan B's ready to go, because
yes,
you know, as we've seen with any change, things are happening at a faster and faster rate. So where X number of years ago, if there was a problem, you might have had a week to work it out. Now you're lucky if you have an hour or two.
Yeah.
So
great,
you know,
point.
You can't drive yourself crazy, but there've got to be the top 10 things that you always have a plan B ready to go at a moment's notice.
Yep. Very good point. Alice, let's get over to you. Any thoughts as you think and contemplate all that we've talked about today?
I love what Bill just said. I think it's a great thing to think through when you think of what are the top 10 bad things at the CEO level. I think we've covered several of them on the show today to actually think about having on your list.
Yeah, I think so. Liquidity, warehouse liquidity, and some of the things that are going on, when that shows up, it's going to be a sudden event. And that's the thing that I think we need to have planning. But we can be proactive. We can get to know the financial institutions with whom we have our warehouse lines. Do your due diligence on them. If you don't feel comfortable with what they are, then you're going to be subject to whatever comes. But if you do your due diligence, we can go from there. A lot going on. David Kittle, kudos to you for taking a group of lenders off to D.C. Thoughts and prayers. Have safe travel. And I'm praying that you have those meetings are really effective And I applaud what TMC is doing, what CHLA is doing, all the ones that are doing this advocacy. But most of all, we say thank you, MBA, for what you're doing, as it's, they got to help. If you haven't read, listeners, Bob Brooksmith's speech that he gave here a week or so ago, he did the best job of really outlining what a conundrum we have as an industry in this regulatory environment. One thing ties to another, and it's almost, you just afraid to move to one way or the other because you think you solved this problem over here and you created another one right behind you. So interesting times, time to be in the mortgage industry.
One thing, it's not just the regulations coming out of D.C., it's all the regulations
all the states
fight in their states as well on top of it.
Yeah. We've got more issues on the state level than ever before. Pay attention, folks, to this podcast. We'll be covering a lot of the stuff. Good conversation, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. We're thrilled to have this kind of conversation for you, our listeners. Again, I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Byte Software, Finastra, Lender Homepage, Truve, Agile AI, Candid, Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Lenders One, Mortgage Collaborative, Mobility MMI, Modix, and Knowledge Cube. Good to have you here with us. Have a great week, everybody. Share this podcast around with others. It's so important that you stay informed of what's going on. We're thrilled and honored to have you as a listener. Have a great week, everyone. Thank you.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.